Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Pete Musto, Dorothy Gundy, and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Researchers say they have developed technology that could predict heart attacks years before they happen. The researchers report using mathematical algorithms to examine computed tomography or CT images of a patient's heart. A CT scan uses X-rays and a computer to make detailed pictures of bones, organs, and other tissue inside the body. The new method was developed by researchers at the University of Oxford in England. A report on their study was published in the medical journal The Lancet. Also taking part in the study were teams from Friedrich Alexander University in Erlangen, Germany, and the Cleveland Clinic in the United States. Most heart attacks result from a buildup of fatty tissue inside arteries that carry blood from the heart to other areas of the body. Too much buildup can block this flow of blood and cause a heart attack. Currently, doctors use CT scans to learn when a sticky substance called plaque has already built up inside an artery. The new technology is designed to predict which arteries are at risk for future buildup. The researchers reported using computer algorithms to examine CT scans to measure how much fat is present around heart arteries. That fat changes when an artery becomes inflamed, serving as an early warning system for heart attacks. Haralambos Antoniadis is a professor of cardiovascular medicine at Oxford University. He told the Reuters news agency he believes the research shows this method could be very effective in getting patients to take early steps to prevent future problems. Say your arteries are inflamed and a narrowing will be developed 5 years down the line. So maybe you can start preventive measures to avoid this formation of plaques, he said. If you are able to identify inflammation in the arteries of the heart, then you can say which arteries will cause heart attacks. Antoniadis added that researchers had yet to estimate exactly how many heart attacks could be prevented. But he said he believes the technique could help identify between 20% to 30% of people at risk of having one. He added that the new technology will make such predictions easier because it works together with existing CT technology. The research was based on two large independent studies of 4,000 patients in Erlangen, Germany, and the Cleveland Clinic. A company with ties to Oxford University is developing a service to examine CT scans of patients around the world, Reuters reported. I'm Brian Lynn.
About half of young people in the United States expect to be more financially successful than their parents, a new study finds. This may be a sign that the dream of upward mobility lives on, even if not everyone believes in it. The study comes from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs and the media company MTV. Researchers questioned 580 Americans from ages 15 to 26, as well as 591 parents of people in that group. The study found that around half of the young people think they will have stronger household finances than their parents. About 29% expect to do as well financially as their parents. 20% expect to do worse. Parents were a little more hopeful. 60% think their children will do better than they themselves did. The 60% included parents of all earning levels. 12% of parents said that they felt their children might do worse. It is no longer a guarantee that children will be able to improve upon the financial situation in which they grew up. In 2016, economist Raj Chetty and other experts released a study confirming this idea. They found that about half of the Americans born in 1984 earned more at age 30 than their parents, down from 92% in 1940. Jennifer Narvaez of Miami, Florida, believes she will be wealthier than her parents. She holds an undergraduate degree in biology and is planning on attending medical school to become an expert on the human heart. The 23-year-old said she expects, as a college graduate, to have better chances to get a job and own a home than her parents. They were born in Nicaragua and immigrated to the United States. Narvaez is less sure about the future of the U.S. economy, especially as the nation appears to be heading into a trade war with China. "It's a weird time," she told the Associated Press. "I feel like it's hard to predict what will happen because of the kind of administration we have." I'm Pete Musto.
Would you like to try turtle soup? How about a thicker, richer tasting gumbo made with alligator meat? Or perhaps you would like a helping of chili made with bear meat. Foods like these might sound very appealing to some Americans, but not everyone. They were just a few of the unusual foods available at the West Virginia Roadkill Cook-Off. The Cook-Off Festival takes place each year in Pocahontas County, West Virginia. Since 1991, the event has been held in the Appalachian Mountains in the small town of Marlinton. The Cook-Off is a celebration of food dishes Americans normally do not find in a restaurant. All the dishes are made with roadkill, meaning animals found on the side of the road after being struck by a car or truck. Anyone can sign up to prepare food for the event, but at least 25% of the meat must be wild, meaning it came from either hunting or killing an animal and not from a store. This year, some of the dishes had names like Drunken Deer in the Headlights and hillbilly, Mardi Gras, alligator, and turtle gumbo. There is more to the festival than just unusual foods. You can also find hundreds of arts and craft dealers who sell their work. There is also a biscuit baking competition and even a roadkill queen beauty competition. The festival is not just about having a good time either. It is also a money-making event for Marlinton and Pocahontas County. It's close to a $2 million economic impact, says Wolfong. The population of Pocahontas County is just slightly over 8,500 people, and they get about 12,000 for the event. Wolfong added that the festival provides money for all businesses in the area, such as fuel businesses, hotels, store owners, and restaurants. For local people, it also is a great way to get involved in the community. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Years ago, syphilis was nearly defeated as a public health threat in the United States. American doctors used antibiotic drugs to fight the disease. But now, the infection rate is on the rise. And syphilis is affecting those most at risk. Newborn babies. The number of babies born infected with syphilis in the U.S. has more than doubled since 2013. This information comes from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In a statement released to the press in September 2018, the CDC reported that the number of congenital syphilis cases more than doubled in 4 years. It is now at a 20-year high. In 2013, there were 362 cases of congenital syphilis, and in 2017, there were 918 cases. That represents an increase of 153%. Syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease, or STD, meaning it is spread mainly through sexual activity. Congenital syphilis is when the disease is passed directly from the mother to the baby. David Harvey heads the National Coalition of STD Directors. He said that when a baby gets syphilis, it means the healthcare system has failed that mother repeatedly, both before and during her pregnancy. Harvey added that if STD prevention programs had the support they need, no new mother would ever have to deal with a terrible syphilis diagnosis. He said that we have any cases of syphilis among newborns, let alone an increasing number, is a failure of the healthcare system. In an interview with CNN, Harvey said that one of the reasons the U.S. is seeing more congenital syphilis has to do with the opioid problem in America. He said public health experts are aware that women are trading sex for drugs. And that, he adds, explains some of the infections we are seeing in babies of syphilis. Gail Bolin is the director of the CDC's Division of STD Prevention. In a 2017 statement, she said, "Every baby born with syphilis represents a tragic system's failure. All it takes is a simple STD test and antibiotic treatment to prevent this enormous heartache and help assure a healthy start for the next generation of Americans. Last year, the CDC published a fact sheet on the state of STDs in the country. The document noted that in recent years, more than half of state and local STD program budgets have been cut. These cuts have affected the services provided at healthcare centers around the country. The CDC also noted that the amount of money patients must pay to healthcare providers for STD testing and treatment has increased in recent years. Doctors can easily treat syphilis with antibiotics. However, when left untreated in the mother, the infection increases the risk of newborn death. The woman could lose the fetus before it is able to survive independently. Children born with syphilis can suffer severe health problems, including deformed bones, blindness, or deafness. About 70% of congenital syphilis cases nationwide are in just five states. They are California, Florida, Louisiana, New Mexico, and Texas. Harvey said that the best way to prevent a woman from passing syphilis to her baby is with early testing. He said women should be tested before becoming pregnant, soon after becoming pregnant, and throughout the pregnancy. Of the babies born with the disease, one-third of the mothers had been tested, but the tests were performed too late to prevent the infection of the fetus, or the woman became infected after being tested. Congenital syphilis is only a part of the growing STD crisis in the United States. The CDC says nearly 2.3 million cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis were identified nationwide in 2017. This is the highest number on record. In 2016, the World Health Organization estimated that more than 1 million sexually transmitted infections are acquired every day worldwide. If you are sexually active, the CDC suggests two things to protect yourself from getting syphilis. Be in a long-term relationship with a single sexual partner who has been tested for syphilis and is not infected. Men should properly use a latex condom every time they have sex. The CDC also suggests that anyone who has more than one sexual partner get tested for all STDs. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Abraham Lincoln. He was the 16th President of the United States. Many Americans consider him one of the country's greatest leaders. Yet people alive when Lincoln was elected in 1860 would probably be surprised by modern-day opinions about him. He had little formal education or government experience. During the presidential campaign, critics made fun of his appearance and his simple way of talking. They warned that he was not very intelligent and would harm the nation's image. Some of his opponents, especially in southern states, had even bigger concerns. They were afraid Lincoln would use the power of the federal government to end slavery in their states. They were right. Abraham Lincoln was born in the frontier state of Kentucky. His family was very poor and had a simple home, a log cabin. Lincoln had to support his parents and his sister by working, so he rarely went to school. Instead, he taught himself by reading books. Eventually, he became a lawyer in the state of Illinois. As a young man, Lincoln was known for several qualities. He was tall and thin. He was very strong. His neighbors remembered him cutting down trees. And he was honest. The people he defended in court called him Honest Abe. In time, Lincoln was elected to the Illinois General Assembly, the state's legislature. He also served one term as a congressman in the U.S. House of Representatives. But he was not popular there. Voters did not like his opposition to the country's war with Mexico. So Lincoln withdrew from politics and turned his attention to his family. He had married a Southern belle named Mary Todd in 1842. They had four sons, but two died when they were very young. Lincoln also developed his legal career representing railroad companies. Some people thought he might become the best railroad lawyer in the country, but that is not what happened. In the 1850s, Lincoln returned to national politics. The division over the issue of slavery was deepening. Lincoln was not an anti-slavery activist, an abolitionist, but he did not support the country's policies on slavery. Lincoln believed slavery violated the American Declaration of Independence, which said all men had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To be clear, Lincoln did not believe that black people should have the same rights as white U.S. citizens. But he did not agree that one person should own other people or profit from their work while they earned nothing and were held captive. Lincoln decided to compete in elections for a seat in the U.S. Senate. He was chosen as the candidate of a new anti-slavery party. Members called themselves Republicans. During the election campaign, Lincoln famously discussed the issue of slavery in a series of debates with Stephen Douglas, the Democratic Party's candidate. Lincoln's words moved some voters, but they did not earn him enough votes to get elected. So, while Douglas took the seat in the Senate, Lincoln prepared to run for president. Lincoln said that, if he were elected, he would not expand slavery to new territories in the country's West. But he promised not to interfere with slavery in the southern states, where it already existed. Voters in southern slaveholding states did not trust Lincoln. Not a single southern state supported him in the election of 1860. But he won anyway. The support of anti-slavery Northerners gave him the presidency. In answer, seven Southern states withdrew from the Union. Four more later joined them. These states formed a new government called the Confederate States of America, or the Confederacy. Confederate officials chose their own president and wrote their own constitution, which permitted each state control over its own laws, especially laws that protected slavery. Confederate officials said they no longer recognized the power of the U.S. federal government or its chief executive. As that chief executive, Lincoln would have to decide what to do. President Lincoln's first test came a little more than a month after he was sworn in. The event involved Fort Sumter, a federal military base on an island off the coast of South Carolina. Soldiers on the base needed food. Lincoln said he would send some by ship. But Confederate officials considered the port part of South Carolina, which belonged to the Confederacy. They demanded that the Union soldiers leave the fort. But Union forces and the U.S. president ignored the Confederates' demands. As promised, Lincoln sent the supply ships. As expected, Confederate soldiers attacked. A day and a half later, the fort's Union soldiers surrendered. The clash did not last long, and no one was killed in the fighting. But the battle at Fort Sumter marked the official beginning of hostilities between the Union and the Confederacy. Lincoln immediately took action to answer the loss at Fort Sumter. He called on state militias for troops and asked for a special meeting of Congress. The president was careful not to ask Congress to make an official declaration of war, in part because he did not want to recognize the Confederacy as a separate nation. Instead, he called the Southern states' opposition a rebellion. However, the conflict between the Southern Confederacy and the Northern Union was a civil war. Neither side expected the fighting to last very long, a few weeks or maybe months. Instead, the Civil War lasted 4.5 years. Most of the major battles took place near Washington, D.C., in the states of Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Soldiers and civilians also clashed in the West, in Tennessee, as well as in the southern states of Mississippi, South Carolina, and Georgia. But the war involved the entire country. At least 4 million men fought in it. Among the soldiers were African American and Native American men. The conflict divided families. Brothers, fathers, and sons fought against each other. Women in both the North and South also supported the war effort. They cooked meals, made and repaired clothing for the troops, served as nurses, and cared for the soldiers. Both white and African American women also took over the work of men who had left to fight. And more than 620,000 men died. Recent scholarship says as many as 750,000. The Civil War remains the bloodiest war in American history, and it changed the country. The war radically affected American politics, economics, and society. Abraham Lincoln was the U.S. president through all of it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.